You're listening to a Federal Communications Commission hearing on media consolidation held in Seattle on November 30th, 2006. The hearing was not considered an official hearing by the FCC because of the absence of the three Republican commissioners. In attendance were FCC commissioners Michael Copps and David Adelstein. The hearing was organized in part by the media activist group Reclaim the Media.
The FCC is accepting written comments on media ownership consolidation until December 21st. To get more information and to file comments online, please visit reclaimthemedia.org, stopbigmedia.com, or fcc.gov.
I'm Mike Fancher, editor-at-large of the Seattle Times. Good evening. I believe in the profession of journalism. I believe that the public journal is a public trust, that all connected with it are, to the full measure of their responsibility, trustees for the public, that acceptance of a lesser service than the public service is betrayal of this trust. I first read those words 45 years ago as a sophomore working for my high school newspaper. They are the beginning of the journalist's creed, written by Walter Williams, the first dean of the nation's first journalism school at the University of Missouri. I've dedicated my life's work to that creed and to the concluding thought, the supreme test of good journalism is the measure of its public service. I've had the good fortune to spend my career at just two newspapers, the Kansas City Star and the Seattle Times, each of which was locally owned and independent when I went to work for them. In both cases, the newspapers were as dedicated as I to the notion of a newspaper being a public trust. I'm here tonight because I fear that notion and the profession of journalism itself are at risk. Before I explain why, let me say something about why it matters. Professional journalism and a vibrant free press are essential to a healthy democracy. Bill Kovich and Tom Rosensteel put it best in their book, The Elements of Journalism. They wrote, "The primary purpose of journalism is to provide citizens with the information they need to be free and self-governing. This democratic mission is not just a modern idea. The concept of creating sovereignty has run through every major statement and argument about the press for centuries, not only from journalists, but from the revolutionaries who fought for democratic principles both in America and in virtually every developing democracy since. Journalism is so fundamental to that purpose of creating community and democracy. Societies that want to suppress freedom must first suppress the press." The threat that I see to journalism as I have practiced it are these four forces: consolidation of media ownership in fewer hands, concentration of ownership in publicly traded media conglomerates, short-term financial pressures resulting in less investment in journalism, and shifting away from local ownership and community connection. When the Pew survey polled journalists in 2005, almost two-thirds, 65%, said that large corporate ownership of most news organizations has a negative impact on the quality of news that the American public receives. When asked specifically about the consequences of larger newspaper chains buying smaller local newspapers, only 10% of the journalists saw this as having a positive impact on the quality of news. Only 12% of journalists said the priority of corporate media owners is to provide the public with factual, timely news coverage. The reason profits trump journalism when news organizations are owned by large corporations. John Carroll, one of the most respected and admired editors in the country, spoke to this reality when he addressed the American Society of Newspaper Editors Convention here in Seattle earlier this year. He said, "In 2005, our troubled industry reported operating profit margins of 19.3%. That's double the average among Fortune 500 companies. These high profits were achieved by relentless cost-cutting, which is rendering newspapers less valuable to their readers each year and less able to compete. What do the current owners want from their newspapers? The answer could not be simpler. Money, that's it. These financial forces are making it harder for the press to do its job as the watchdog of government and making it easier for government to manipulate coverage. Hard-hitting, independent, investigative journalism is expensive, and it is being squeezed out in many news organizations. As bad as things have been, they would have been worse if the FCC had successfully eased cross-ownership of newspaper, television, and radio stations in single markets 3 years ago. They will be worse if these rules are eased in the future. Finally, let me say, if the public sees media companies as driven by profits, not public service, it will not support the press in a constitutional showdown with government. And I think we may be heading for one with mounting pressure for journalists to reveal their sources, especially in cases concerning national security. The forces for government secrecy and coercion of the press are powerful. The need for a public journal to be a public trust has never been greater, and I urge you to do all you can in that cause. Thank you.
Before we hear from our next speaker, may I ask again that the speakers keep within your time limit and watch the timekeeper out of respect for all the members of the public who are patiently waiting for their turn to speak. Thank you.
Good evening. Sharon, you would say that being a son of a preacher, you knew I was going to be talking for a long time. Good evening, commissioners. My name is Robert Jeffrey, and I'm the co-owner and CEO of Colors Northwest, Inc., a local family-owned company that publishes Colors Northwest Magazine, a magazine dedicated to exploring ethnic diversity in the Northwest, and ColorsNorthwestCareers.com, a job portal to connect job seekers of color to employers looking to hire people of color. Colors Northwest Magazine was born in 2001, and in the most improbable of circumstances, with not much more than an idea, a staff that believed in the mission, and a relatively tiny amount of startup capital, we were able to scrape out the first few issues by the skin of our teeth. No one was quite sure what to make of us. As a multi-ethnic publication, we didn't fit into the mainstream model or even the ethnic media model. While we had no shortage of powerful story ideas to work with, getting revenue to grow the business was always an uphill battle. Many advertisers could not see the benefit of advertising with a small startup publication, preferring to make group buys with larger publications or publications with large parent companies. Like many ethnic publications, we have had a lot to do with little. For the first 3 years, we worked out of our homes, having no offices or infrastructure to speak of. This kept costs down and allowed us to weather rocky financial times like the period after 9/11. The voice of Colors Northwest brings to the local media landscape is unique and independent. We are not beholden to shareholders or the market, and we keep our advertising and editorial departments strictly separate. Despite our small staff, the journalism we produce has been recognized with numerous awards, including this year by the Society of Professional Journalists as the best overall magazine in the region. Some notable stories have dealt with the effect of federal detention policy on immigrants, the relations between African Americans and African immigrants, and the effects of Hurricane Katrina on people of color. I say all this tonight to say that ethnic media landscape is one that is dynamic, thriving, and growing. According to a study by New American Media, 45% of people of color prefer ethnic media to mainstream media. People of color are fully a third of the U.S. population and are slated to grow even further. Non-whites are suspected to be the majority in 2050. Yet, in media ownership, this democratic power is not present. According to a study called Out of the Picture by the Free Press, people of color are dramatically underrepresented in media ownership, with only 3.26% of all TV stations owners non-white, although people of color are 33% of the population. This rate of ownership would be compounded by the increasing push for media consolidation by the FCC, whose regulations have kept the media conglomerates who have long been tempted by the money-making potential in the ethnic market, from buying up the few small ethnic media organizations we have. The loosening of these rules would add to the pressure companies like mine and have in staying independent and family-owned. This disparity in ownership worsened the ongoing exclusion of people of color in society. Nancy Zirkin of the Leadership Conference of Civil Rights said, "This should be a national embarrassment." And the fact that some of the recent FCC have been more interested in giving more power to those who have already have too much, rather than addressing decades of discrimination and ensuring that the little guy will get a chance, should be a national scandal. We strongly encourage the FCC commissioners to consider the negative downward pressure from media consolidation on ethnic and independent media. One of my favorite idols, Malcolm X, said, "The media is the most powerful entity on earth. They have the power to make the innocent guilty and to make the guilty innocent. And that's power, because they control the minds of the masses. It is the independent media, mainstream and alternative, that are needed to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. This is the crucial and precious duty of the Fourth Estate, and its freedom from consolidation for profit needs to be protected." I'm very short in my statements. Thank you for your time. And here's my comment.
Robert, I would have much preferred to speak in front of you. I'm Mark Emmert. I'm the president of the University of Washington, but I'm really here tonight as a citizen, not as the university's president, but as someone who has spent his entire life in education, as either a student or as a teacher or as an academic administrator. And my perspective on this is slightly different, perhaps. I don't pretend to be an expert on media consolidation and media ownership. I don't really understand fully all of the economics of the dynamics that are going on in the media today. But what I do understand is the educational process, and what I do understand is the role of universities, especially research universities, in our society today. If you look at what happens at a university in an academic setting, what you see is that we're really charged with two simple tasks. One is the creation of new knowledge and new ways of understanding the world around us. And the second is disseminating that information to our students and to the world beyond the Ivy walls. Now, the consolidation or homogenization of information, the homogenization of the distribution of ideas around cultural creation, the lack of diversity that comes from that homogenization of opinions is completely and utterly antithetical to the creation of new knowledge, the creation of new cultures, and the transmission of those to society. It is utterly impossible to have world-class universities like the United States has if we do not have the free flow of ideas, a clear and open exchange of diverse opinions and views, and forums within which those can be objectively discussed, debated, and considered in a full and thoughtful fashion. The consolidation of the media that I see around the United States that's underway right now is working exactly in the opposite of the directions that I, as an educator, think are healthy for our students, for our society, and for our educational enterprises. If one stops and thinks about young people coming to a university who have only seen single points of view in the media, have only been fed cultural perspectives that are about as rich as fast food, if they have never heard a free and open debate of ideas, what kind of students are those going to be? What is the probability that they are going to challenge views and opinions in a classroom? What is the probability they're going to be open to diverse opinions that they're going to hear in a university? What's the probability that they themselves are going to be creative and invent new ideas going forward? I've had the opportunity to go to universities in nations where The homogenization of opinions is, in fact, the only opinions that go forward. And you can find students there who are very good at math. You can find students that are very good at reciting the scientific facts of the day. But you will not find students who are creative. You will not find students who are pushing forward new scientific borders. You will not find students who want to debate issues with their classmates, let alone with their faculty. In short, you will not find the makings of democracy in those places. The free flow of ideas, the diversity of opinions, the capacity to hear ideas locally and nationally is utterly critical to the educational enterprise. I salute your battle in this effort, and I thank you for your good hard work, and I really appreciate you taking time to hear the voices of the people of Seattle. Thank you very much.
Commissioners Copps and Adelstein and all those who made this possible, thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of one of the largest municipal telecommunications companies in the country. I'm Diane Lachelle, and I'm the Government Relations Manager for Tacoma Power's CLIC Network. I've seen many changes in the regulatory landscape in my 37 years in this field. Some changes made logical sense, others, quite frankly, seem irrational. One area of regulation that needs careful scrutiny is media ownership, and I applaud your efforts. I plan to cover three topics associated with ownership: the lack of local news, anti-competitive practices, and retransmission consent. First, the lack of local news. I live in Gig Harbor. It's a little suburb of Tacoma, down the road a piece. The city of Tacoma is Washington State's second largest city. Back in 1984, the Tacoma market was awash in localism. It supported two commercial broadcast TV stations, one PBS station, one city-run cable channel, and an independent cable channel as well. The impact of media consolidation in our market means very little local television news. Many evenings, it means no coverage at all. It actually boggles my mind to think that a city with a population of 200,000 in a region twice that size, a Seattle station, can't find a nugget newsworthy enough from 23 different cities in that county. Sadly, I don't feel very well served by those who have free access to the public's airwaves. My second point, anti-competitive tactics. Here's an example of the impact of vertically integrated media ownership to our little competitive business. As you know, Congress's primary intention of the Telecom Act of 96 was to encourage competition amongst wireline providers. That legislation allowed traditional phone companies to get into the video delivery business. It allowed cable companies to get into the phone business. And it dropped barriers to entry for power companies to do both, if actually allowed to by their state authorities. Tacoma Power, a municipal corporation and operated by the city of Tacoma, was way ahead of the game. After years of unsuccessfully trying to get the phone and cable companies to provide critical connectivity from 65 substations throughout the utility's 180 square mile area back to a central location for the purpose of monitoring the electric system, the utility had no other choice but to construct its own telecommunications network. The two incumbent wireline providers admitted at the time they didn't have the capacity to provide the kinds of services the utility needed, nor did they have any plans to upgrade their networks anytime soon. Thus, in 1997, CLIC Network was born. After getting unanimous approval by the Public Utility Board and City Council, we began constructing a state-of-the-art network for the utility's own use. We also added capacity to the network to offer retail cable TV, wholesale internet, and wholesale high-speed data services. When we began lining up channels for our cable service, several programmers refused to work with us after receiving pressure from their corporate owner. Their owner just happened to be our competition. The programmers were pressured not to work with us because we were overbuilding their cable arm of their parent company. It took the threat of an anti-competitive lawsuit before the programmers would offer their channels. This was not an isolated case. It's happened several times with programmers in the last decade, and also with equipment manufacturers and distributors. Essential electronic component deliveries were delayed due to pressures exerted by our competition. It happened this week. My third point, I'd like to comment about the impact of retransmission consent on our business. Retransmission consent appears to be an unintended consequence of relaxed media ownership rules. In our market, some local broadcast stations select must-carry status in order to be carried on our network. That means as a cable company, we must carry them. Other broadcasters choose retransmission consent status, which means they can negotiate their carriage terms. Some of the broadcasters own multiple channels. For instance, King TV owns Kong. Como is an ABC affiliate and is owned by Disney. In the retransmission consent scheme, media giants have disproportionate power and can force carriage of channels our customers don't even want. If we don't carry the demanded channels, network affiliates could threaten to pull their primary channel, which would be political suicide for us. In conclusion, please consider strengthening the media ownership rules rather than relaxing them. Power in the hands of four or five media conglomerates is not healthy for a democratic society. Thank you for your time.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is John Sandifer, Executive Director, Seattle Local of AFTRA. We've seen each other before. I really want to start by speaking on behalf of our members in applauding particularly you two commissioners for getting out here into the hinterlands and letting us have an opportunity to tell you what we think about that. You are our heroes. Now, as a former broadcaster, I really want to hit my time here, as so many others have not. I know you're familiar with AFTRA because of our appearance here before, our written argumentation filed in Washington, D.C., an appearance of our officers and members October 3rd, I think, in Los Angeles, which is a huge turnout. So to localize our comments, from Seattle, AFTRA represents more than 1,000 professional performers in a wide range of radio, television, commercial, and music endeavors that depend on a free and competitive broadcast outlets for their livelihoods. And in turn, the community depends, or should be able to depend, on us to provide them the very best and most diverse menu of thought and artistic expression. The pattern in television here has generally been for two or three network-affiliated stations to deliver news over as many as six stations and one or two cable systems. They have also formed strategic alliances with the newspapers for content delivery, but I think that's been as much a matter of economics and convenience as it has been consolidation. In fact, generally, those television stations who have had radio have divested themselves of that. But we are hit with absentee ownership. For instance, at the present time, four of the five major commercial stations who deliver a news product are owned by Viacom-CBS, Belo, Cox, the Tribune. One station is locally owned. Belo, as others have said, operates King, Kong, Cable, the Northwest Cable News. I would simply suggest that if you add ownership consolidation to the effect of the competition in cable, computer, cell phone, iPod competition, and the incessant clicking of that remote control device, what happens is the bottom line often takes over the right of citizens to have their airwaves used for the collective benefit. In radio, in this market, ownership consolidation has resulted in four large conglomerates owning and operating 88% of the top 20 stations, or top 25 stations. Those are Clear Channel, Infinity, Intercom, and Sandusky. In Portland, these same Enterprises operate 16 of the top 20 stations. I want to turn over the rest of my time to our local president and a professional broadcaster, Steve Kruger, who has a handle on the effect on radio news.
Thanks, John. John's given you the black and white of the media consolidation picture in the Seattle market. I'd like to talk to you about how that constriction of media ownership affects the radio market here, and more importantly, how that impacts the flow of free ideas and information. For the last 14 of my four years of my 40-year career as a reporter, I've worked as a journalist at KPLU, a major professional national public radio station serving all of Western Washington. Now, I say that with a lot of pride, both because I know that my colleagues and I do a good job of reporting the news and editing for the material for the air, but also because public radio reporters of any kind are becoming an endangered species. Only four of the licensed 48 radio stations in the Seattle market offer local news anymore. Of those, I have to say that the good news is that those four are among the top-rated radio stations in this market, which tells me the public does want news, as opposed to what the owners would tell you. Some other stations offer an endless montage of talk shows, but these generally, in my opinion, fall exclusively into the category of entertainment. The emotion-driven, endless banter that they offer does help to form public opinions, but it provides little in the way of factual information that I believe a citizen needs in a free society to form educated and fact-based opinions that they can employ in affecting public policy. The reason is simple. Providing local news is expensive. Of course, it cuts into the bottom line of the large corporations that John's explained increasingly control the radio market here and elsewhere across America. In other words, the system now and the proposed growth of the consolidated industry works real well for the big markets that own the stations, but not so well for the public that I believe is thirsty for facts about the events that shape their lives. America's broadcast owners are creating a society that's starving for information in the midst of a sea of information. They offer the public noise and chatter designed to increase ratings numbers that will in turn increase their corporate profits, but do little to give the public the information they need to make major decisions about things like war and peace. Those of us who work in the media are not to blame. Very often reporters get the gears from the public who say, you guys are terrible. All you report is the crime of the day. It's not our choice. I'm a public radio journalist and more is expected of me, but as president of AFTRA, I know many good reporters who work for those TV stations and commercial radio stations. It's not their idea to cover what bleeds leads. They would prefer to be doing real news. What's resulting, though, I think, is a confused electorate, one that admits it has trouble with critical thinking to evaluate events and find events that will affect society for many years. This is not a partisan political issue, though. This is a problem that speaks to the very functioning of a democracy. If those who vote don't believe they understand issues, why should they vote? We live in an information age. We need to consider what kind of information we're talking about. Should radio only be a forum for the screamers and the panderers? Or should the public be able to hear the facts as they get stuck in traffic every day going home and are a great, great opportunity to broaden your mind sitting there waiting for the red lights to move in front of you? Should the public be able to hear the facts that empower participants in a democratic society? Station owners say they're only giving the public what it wants. That's a lie. They're giving themselves what they want, the unrestricted ability to generate huge profits at the expense of American democracy. Thank you.
Hi. My name is Joel Kelsey. I'm the grassroots coordinator for Consumers Union. We're the nonprofit publisher of Consumer Reports. In addition to providing consumers with independent research and analysis on many different products, through our magazine, we also fight for a fair and just marketplace by standing up for consumer rights and public policy. I'd like to thank Reclaim the Media, the Seattle Times, KBCS for the opportunity to testify here tonight. I'd also like to thank Commissioners Copps and Edelstein for being here. You've both been present at a number of these hearings throughout the nation, and I commend you for traveling throughout America to hear what we have to say about media policy. Thank you. So I'm here today to briefly share the consumer angle on receiving and accessing local news and information through our media, and to urge the FCC to avoid the dangerous path of weakening the current ownership caps. Above all, the American consumer values choice. We want the ability to choose not just between different mediums through which we access local news, but we also want the ability to choose between different voices, viewpoints, and opinions when we read, watch, or listen to local news. This is a very important distinction to make because it shows that consumers will not be fooled by recycled local news provided by the same company through different mediums. Just because consumers can read different newspapers or tune to different local channels and stations does not mean that we can easily access different viewpoints and voices when all of these sources stem from the same parent company. We understand the difference between variety and diversity. The ability to choose among diverse local views and opinions is a choice that consumers crave and is the choice that a healthy democracy is built on. When local media companies own and operate a majority of the local TV and radio stations from hundreds of miles away, local news coverage is significantly diluted. And Congressman Inslee stole a little bit of my thunder here. But in fact, a report recently made public by the FCC indicates that as out-of-town media companies buy out smaller local stations, the coverage of local issues significantly declines. The FCC found that locally owned radio and television stations air close to 6 minutes more local news per broadcast than stations with more distant owners. It all adds up to a very simple equation. Lifting or weakening the caps on how many stations a company is able to own in one media market means large media conglomerates will swallow up more stations and provide viewers and listeners with less local news. And this erosion of local news, particularly in television, is especially disturbing because local television broadcasters are one of only two sources on which Americans really rely to get information about issues and events that are relevant to their community. In 2004, Consumers Union and the Consumer Federation of America randomly surveyed consumers to find out which news sources Americans depend on for local news and information. We found that most, in fact 34%, believe the major daily newspaper is the most important source of local news. Local television broadcasters followed in a close second at 21%. So when people want to know what happened at the latest Common Council meeting, or when the Salvation Army's next closing drive is, or when the next school board meeting is, they turn to their local television stations and newspapers. These are by far the two most dominant sources of local news and information. And so all these different numbers tell us two things. One is that by lifting the ban on cross-ownership between television stations and the local major daily newspaper, the FCC would be allowing the two most competitive sources of local news to merge. It's a dangerous thing for media democracy in America. The second thing is by easing the caps on television and radio station ownership, the FCC would be adding fuel to the fire that is gobbling up local news coverage. This means that the FCC decides to once again walk down that dangerous road of lifting or easing the already weakened ownership caps. It would be undermining any remaining benefits of local competition. It would be limiting consumer choice and making it much harder for localism and diversity to thrive in the American media. We urge the FCC to avoid this path and instead fulfill its mission of encouraging localism and diversity by putting the will of the American public before the purse strings of the American media industry. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Good.
I'm probably one of the shortest person here. And I'm probably going to be, not only be short, but be very brief in my comment. My name is Maya Nguyen. I'm the president of the Minority Executive Directors Coalition. MADC is the longest standing and broadest based association of executive directors and program directors who are persons of color working in private, nonprofit, human service, and community development agency in Seattle and King County. Founded in 1981, MADC is recognized for its success in sustaining a diverse, multiracial coalition of individuals who work together to inform, educate, influence, and empower our diverse constituents in an effort to work toward social, political, and economic equality and justice for communities of color in King County. It was founded by Bernie White Bear, Roberto Maestas, Bob Santos, and Larry Gossett, uniting the Asian Pacific American community, African American, Native American, and Chicano Latino community in advocacy for people of color. MADC currently has over 150 members. For over 23 years, we have worked successfully in sustaining and nurturing cooperation, unity, and networking among its members. We are here today to express our deepest concern over the issue of media ownership consolidation. We believe that media ownership consolidation will have a devastating impact on our community, and we do not support it at all. The current coverage and shows we receive from our mainstream media is appalling and distorts who we are, mostly covering people of colors committing crimes, as you already heard, or the various stereotypes of our community. We work countlessly and daily to deal with these stereotypes and media images of our communities. We need broad coverage and shows that reflects the contributions of people of color, and we believe that consolidating the ownership of the media is not the answer. We are thankful for you two in championing this work, and we will do whatever it takes in our community and organizing our community to help in fighting this effort. Thank you.
Hi, my name is David Groves. I'm the communications director for the Washington State Labor Council, the largest union organization in the state, which represents the interests of 1,000 rank and file union members. And I thank you for the opportunity to come here and speak to you tonight. One of my responsibilities at the State Labor Council is media relations, which includes trying to convince the press to cover issues and events that unions would like more people to know about. Sometimes I succeed, and more often I don't. I suppose that's probably true for a lot of people that do my work. But in my experience, those of us in organized labor feel particularly disenfranchised by the so-called mainstream media, and for good reasons, all of which are exacerbated by media consolidation. And that's why the State Labor Council and the National AFL-CIO strongly oppose any FCC proposal to relax media ownership limits. Back in the day, newspapers used to have reporters who were assigned the labor beat, and union news was much more common. Now there are only business reporters, if that. They cover strikes and labor disputes and precious little else involving unions, except perhaps union political activity and criticism of it. Reporters I deal with often aren't familiar with the different unions, how they operate, and who they represent, and the quality of their coverage suffers as a result. Now, one can argue that the extensive coverage that labor occurred at a time when far more people belong to unions, and that may be true to an extent. But here in Washington, nearly 20% of the jobs are unionized, making us one of the most heavily unionized states in the nation. And there's more than 500,000 union members, all of whom are media consumers, and I think they'd like to learn more about what their unions are doing. Many union leaders I talk to have come to believe that the corporate media, as they call it, is predisposed against them and deliberately ignores union issues for ideological reasons. Although I understand their frustration, as a former newspaper copy editor myself, I wasn't so sure that was true. I didn't want to believe that was true. I thought there's nothing sinister about it. It's not a vast white right-wing or left-wing conspiracy. It's just economics. The big media conglomerates that have been allowed to buy up newspapers, radio, and TV stations are making profit-minded decisions to cut costs. And the handful of independent and family-owned media that remain are often forced to do the same in order to compete. They end up shrinking their news departments, or in the case of some radio stations, eliminating them entirely. They end up broadcasting or printing more syndicated national content instead of locally produced programs and stories. And that's excuse number one I hear from news editors about why they didn't cover our issues, that no reporters were available. They were just stretched too thin that day. But it's excuse number two that gives me pause to reconsider the argument that corporate media ideology is to blame. Oftentimes, union news involves organizing drives where workers at a particular company are trying to form a union. These days in America, a multi-billion dollar union avoidance industry exists. And employers hire these consultants to teach them how they can skirt or just plain break the law that says employers are allowed are not allowed to coerce, intimidate, or interfere with workers who support unionization. Employers can do this today with relative impunity because the law is so weak and rarely enforced. That's why unions often send out press releases and seek media coverage of illegal employer harassment or outright firing of union organizers, because the wheels of justice at the National Labor Relations Board turn way too slowly, if at all. So media scrutiny of these potentially illegal actions is critical, but it rarely happens. An excuse I usually get from news editors is that we don't get involved in internal labor disputes except when it affects the entire community. My translation for that is that newspapers, radio, and TV stations have no interest in impugning area businesses, all of which are advertisers or potential advertisers, based on the accusation of some angry worker or union. I'm here to tell you that the suppression of working people's freedom of association does affect the entire community and deserves some scrutiny. We aren't getting it today, and we have even less chance of getting it tomorrow if the FCC allows giant corporations to continue buying up broadcast outlets and newspapers. We need to go in the exact opposite direction to add more independent voices in the media. And I thank you for listening.
I see what she meant. Another short person. My name is Kathy Gill. I am a senior lecturer at the Department of Communications at the University of Washington. But like the president, I'm here today as a citizen. Thank you for the opportunity to speak briefly about my concerns about the increasing concentration of media ownership in America. A lot of other people have already talked about the oligopolistic nature of the market. But we also have to realize that this comes along with something called lack of transparency in ownership. For example, was the average consumer aware before the controversy this past week of the hand-in-glove relationship between Fox News and HarperCollins? The fact that News Corp was using one channel, Fox, to promote another business in the hopes of making higher profits. Now, kind of backfired on them, but the intent was there, and we can be pretty sure that when the HarperCollins person came on the air, no one said, and oh, by the way, we own this company. The key issue that I'm concerned with today, though, is that of the digital commons, which has only been briefly, tangentially mentioned so far. The current Congress considered, but thankfully did not pass, legislation that it would have radically changed the relationship between local government and cable firms. Now, one of the arguments for this, of course, was efficiency. This is always the argument for consolidation. The bill, H.R. 5252, the Communications Opportunity Promotion and Enhancement Act of 2006, would have set up a national franchise for cable companies, replacing the current system of locally negotiated contracts. It would have preempted state and local consumer protection laws, preempted local government authority over municipal rights of way, and preempted state laws prohibiting local government from offering certain services to provide internet access. And that's all from the Congressional Budget Office. Now, some of the controversy around this bill came about because of efforts designed to ensure that the network underlying the internet retains a common carrier ethic. So imagine for a moment that your cell phone provider is Singular, and your closest friend has only a landline provided by Qwest. That's our local phone company, in case you didn't know that. Currently, because of common carrier regulation, each telephone provider has to treat each incoming call as the same, as though they were on the same network. This neutrality was mandated by Congress because telephone networks were, and at least still are for the time being, considered important public infrastructure. But the proposals being promoted in Congress today by telecos and cable firms like AT&T and Verizon, Comcast and Time Warner, which is also the nation's largest media company, are laying the groundwork for dismantling this network neutrality for the internet. Now, as a rallying call, this is a horrible name. And what we really should be saying is that we are resisting network discrimination. This issue, who will control how data move across the internet, is of vital importance. There's been a lot of talk tonight about public airwaves, but we are in a transition between public networks and private ones. He who controls the channel has the power to privilege certain voices and data and to deny others. When you consider that one player alone, Times Warner, appears in the top five in both media ownership and broadband ownership, I think we should all pay close attention to this issue. This digital commons is also important because one of the cries that you will hear and that you have heard to dismantle the prohibitions on media consolidation is that there's this great big wild west of competition out there on the internet. When we're talking about connectivity, that is not the case. Lawrence Lessig talked to Financial Times last month where he said we have fewer competitors offering broadband connectivity today in the United States than we did 8 years ago. And the US ranks 16th in the world with citizens who have access to broadband. And those are inflated data. The market of ideas in a functioning democracy rests solidly on the vision of Jefferson, Adam Smith. This is the antithesis of the vision of consolidation exhibited by media giants like Fox or Time Warner, Verizon or Comcast. Please resist all forms of network discrimination and network consolidation.
Thank you very much. Now we're going to begin the public statements, and if you see your name on the list, we ask that you make your way down near the podium so we can move in quick succession. The library, you may have heard a muffled announcement in the other room. The library is closing in a few minutes. If you leave the building now, you will not be allowed to return back in. So we will begin now with the public testimony. The first person is Todd Boyle.
Commissioner Copps and Adelstein, I want to thank you for the work you've been doing. I've been really appreciating it. I'm an anti-war activist, and so I just want to put some perspective on what it's been like for the last 4 years. You know, in 2003, I could not believe what happened with the media, 2002 and 2003, leading up to the war in Iraq. And I became pretty much a full-time anti-war activist. You know, I couldn't believe it. You go one channel after another, it was just flags and martial music on every channel. And we spent the last 4 years trying to roll back this corporate propaganda, the propaganda from these corporate-owned apparatus. We tried to tell people that the war was illegal. Article 6 of the Constitution makes our treaties binding on you and me and George Bush and everybody else. You never hear that on the media. This is U.S. law. It's the president broke the law. You're not allowed to invade other countries. We've got numerous treaties on this. Then Bill O'Reilly can pick up his microphone and he can tell 20 million people his untruths. There's no way that we can work against this. We walk up and down the street with our banners. We stand on overpasses. And you know, the untruths include the fact that the nation is not your supreme unit of affiliation. You belong to your community. You belong to the human race. 95% of the human race is outside of the United States. The federal government is not our nation. Major media conflate them every day. The federal government, the government, and the nation. Military service is not inherently noble. Every war since World War II was an unjust, cruel, and murderous orgy. We've killed millions and millions of completely innocent people, including 600,000 innocent people in Iraq in the last 4 years. Yet the corporate media, the main culprit in this jingoistic attitude in our country, just is unchallenged. Okay, now the reason I wanted to rant on this is because media corporations are never going to make a profit, whether they're national, local, talking about this issue, because the people who pay the cost of U.S. wars are not in the United States. They're outside the United States. They're outside the U.S. media market. They're outside the U.S. politics system. They don't vote in the United States. 95% of the humanity outside the U.S. The beneficiaries of U.S. militarism are here in the United States. In Washington State, 7% of our economy is in the bases and the military. That's a huge amount of patronage, votes, and money. You can, there's nothing much, this is a difficult problem, guys, and I don't know what you're going to do about it. You really have my sympathy. But we've got four wolves and a sheep voting over dinner, okay? And the United States is the 5%. That's the four wolves, and all the rest of the planet is the sheep.
My name is Andy Scottdahl. I'm a licensee of a single-directional AM radio station in Everett. I'm one of five locally based station licensees left in Snohomish, King, and Pierce counties. Two of my local owner counterparts, Gene Sue and Chris Bennett, both own a newspaper and a couple of stations. One serves the Korean community and one serves the Central District. Both operations are extremely successful in delivering local news to their respective communities, and I would argue that local news and diversity clearly benefit from these combinations. I also serve as the vice chairman of the Washington State Association of Broadcasters. The WSAB strongly believes in competition and media diversity. And in Seattle, we believe that competition should include two newspapers, not a one newspaper monopoly. Over 100 communities lost their second daily newspaper because it completely closed or merged in the last 13 years. Cross-ownership could have saved those papers and made local stations stronger. Media diversity in Dallas was not served when the Times-Herald closed, nor will media diversity be served in Seattle if the Seattle PI is forced out without a chance at cross-ownership. The Third Circuit's 2004 decision endorsed the fact that commonly owned newspaper and TV stations produce better local news in higher quality and with better quantity, and 45 grandfathered TV newspaper combinations prove this is true. Most small cities in America have only one local news outlet. Many are lucky to have two competing news outlets. Seattle has more than 20. People want more local news, but focusing on an ancient broadcast rules in the hope of more local news is like trying to stop all foreign car imports by focusing on England. The Washington State Association of Broadcasters believes there is common ground, and the broadcasters I know believe passionately in serving their communities well, including my adversaries at Clear Channel. I'd respectfully ask that the rhetoric and platitudes be toned down and that you both maintain an open mind to the potential public benefits of the changes as well. You can't discuss local news in isolation without also recognizing the market changes that supported the news in the first place, and the WSAB looks forward to having that discussion too. Thank you.
Well, you heard it. My name is Emily. 71 years ago this month, I saw my first article published. And between then and President Reagan, I earned 26 awards. When he came in, he did not like environmentalists, so he pretty well deleted me as a journalist, not as an author. But at that time, he also did one other thing. He gave the wasting asset corporations immunity from taxes, practically, to buy up and dispose of the alternative voices. But he may not have known it, but he was really a tool of the people who are in the White House now. They began in 1968 in their effort to control the world. At that time, one of them wrote his thesis on how easy it would be to scare us into submission. I think it's about time that we turned this thing around and scared them. I will. As you can see, I belong to one of the group that have been making an active noise. I think that what we should do is copy the media, copy the corporations, and consolidate as they did. When we have just four of us, we should hit them hard on four issues. First, impeach. Second, delete corporations. Don't just fix them, delete them. Thirdly, we will do it with IRV, which is a system of voting that will take it back to the people. And finally, we have to reinvent the independent journalists. They've been losing now for years. It is the only way that you get actual truth, because that is why they're independent. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kathy Schreier, and I'm current president of the Washington Journalism Education Association, which is an organization of more than 100 journalism teachers and high school media advisors across the state of Washington. I also teach part-time in the Seattle Public Schools, and I work part-time for the Washington News Council. The late Nelson Poynter, founder of the Poynter Institute for Journalistic Excellence, believed that journalism is meant to inform citizens and enlighten public discourse. As a journalism educator, I hope to launch students into a society where a multitude of voices and viewpoints are expressed, and where the First Amendment reigns strong. Teachers who are a member of the Washington Journalism Education Association spend a lot of time teaching about the First Amendment, and there are many students in our state who are passionate about the First Amendment. Consolidation of media ownership threatens to undermine our fundamental freedom of choice and access to information, freedoms that our young people have a right to inherit as participants in our democracy. Large corporate entities already control many aspects of our lives, but control of the airwaves and the printed word must not be in the hands of a select few. The FCC is a public trust. It can and must have a vision of the future that rejects supersizing and embraces the public discourse that Nelson Poynter so cherished. Our children deserve nothing less. Thank you.
You're listening to a Federal Communications Commission hearing on media consolidation held in Seattle on November 30th, 2006. The hearing was not considered an official hearing by the FCC because of the absence of the three Republican commissioners. In attendance were FCC commissioners Michael Copps and David Adelstein. The hearing was organized in part by the media activist group Reclaim the Media.
The FCC is accepting written comments on media ownership consolidation until December 21st. To get more information and to file comments online, please visit reclaimthemedia.org, stopbigmedia.com, or fcc.gov.